You're listening to the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
Hey, hey, party people. This is Scott McKay from XMY Communications coming at you again with episode number 55 of the world famous Chick Whisperer podcast. Let me tell you something. We're going to cover a little bit of a different angle on this show than we usually do. Today, we're going to talk about how to man up, which I guess isn't a different angle, but keep on listening. Wait for it. How to man up and get your act together as a man. Now, why is this important? Because when you get your act together as a man, not only is life going to be better for you in just about every way, one of those ways is going to be women will naturally start to just absolutely dig your chili. Okay. Now, what I mean by that is you're not going to have to push this uphill, as I say. There'll be no tricking women into liking you. There'll be no remembering lines. None of this stuff that I always kind of have a chuckle at with you guys. Look, if you're manning up and getting your act together and being this guy who knows where he's going in life, has got his stuff together, has got his act straight, then women are going to take notice and they're going to like you for it. And I'm going to tell you something else. You're also going to stand out as a man because it is absolutely appalling how few of us as men, especially younger guys out there, cough. You guys, if you can get your act together at a very young age, women won't need older guys. You'll be the guy their age who has his act together already. I mean, let that sink in because it's huge. Now, to help me talk about all this today is a guy who has one of the most popular programs in the world on getting your act together. It focuses a lot on time management and really a lot more than that. It goes into more of a life management mode. How to get your act together. His name's Zach Broman. You probably heard of him before. He also has a very popular program out there on a slightly different subject of making women laugh. But this newest thing that he's got going on today is particularly interesting to me. So I wanted to make sure that I had him in to talk about it and co-host the show with me. Zach Broman, all the way from Vancouver. What is up, my brother?
Things are going well.
Yeah, it's always going well in Vancouver, isn't it?
Yeah, except for the rain, it's always going well in Vancouver. It's a great place to live.
Yeah, a couple years ago, I think a lot of people even who didn't even really know a whole lot about Vancouver, Canada, were really just introduced to it in a huge way by the Winter Olympics you guys had there. And man, just the shots they would show before they got the show rolling and the airplanes landing on the water and the huge mountains in the background just make it, you know, a place that's just about on everybody's bucket list to visit if they haven't been there already. Just a beautiful place.
It is. Yeah, it is very beautiful.
Now, you and I have been friends for a while. This show is probably long overdue. You've got this great program on making women laugh that every time I tell my audience about it, man, they're all over it. They give us great reviews about it. You are a guy who has been making women happy for a long time. You're a married guy. You're like me in many ways. You've got kids. You've already started your family, and you just love that. And it's really easy, especially when you start getting some responsibilities in life, to sort of let your mojo slip a little, not even necessarily just with your wife, but with stuff in general. It just seems like there's this mountain of busyness that descends upon you and just is designed and bent on your destruction when it comes to your productivity. Is that not true?
Yeah, it happens then. For me, it had been happening my entire life. I mean, you know, procrastination has just been a huge problem with me for as long as I can remember. Really bad. And I guess as soon as the whole homework thing happened, I wasn't doing it. And,
back in school, right?
Back in school, in high school, you know, to give you an example, my last year, and I actually had to repeat my last year in high school. Well, in Ontario at the time where I was living, we had 5 years of high school, not four. And my
fifth, grade 13, right?
I had grade 13 and I had grade 14. My last year I did so poorly. And I actually was getting good marks on things. I had an English class, for example, where for each day you did something and you lost a letter grade. So an A became a B, B became a C. And I went from every single essay I turned in did well. I was getting A's and A pluses, they were actually turned into D's, C's because they were all 3 or 4 days late. So this was a problem that had been going on with me for a really long time. And I'd taken some time because meeting and attracting women had been such a problem for me as well. And I'd spent some time working on that, and I you know, got some good results. But, you know, my life just was still not coming together or wasn't falling into place. And this procrastination thing seemed to be my number one problem. It seemed to be the source of a lot of my problems, source of relationship conflicts and money troubles and, you know, stress and anxiety. And I think, and also, you know, how I viewed myself. I mean, hey, everybody's, you know, procrastinated at one time or another, and it's not so good on your self-esteem. I mean, I really, to be honest, when I procrastinate, which was a lot, I'd hate myself. You know, I'd feel like a loser, and I'd feel like, you know, like I was useless, and I feel worried that, you know, I was going to die and leave the planet without really putting anything out into the world, because I just couldn't get stuff done. I had a lot of ideas, but I just could not get stuff done. And that was weighing on me so much that I decided to sort of tackle the problem head on. And as you know, I've been a psychology buff for a long time and read a lot of books on the brain and psychology, and decided to see maybe I can outsmart this thing, because what I've been doing so far, discipline, willpower, promising myself, you know, next time it's going to be different, I'm going to get this done ahead of the deadline next time. I'd told that, you know, thousands of times, and it never worked. So, yeah, I mean, getting my act together, it improved my, you know, relationship, because it improved the way I saw myself. And I think one of the things, as you say, we talk about techniques and what to say to a woman and body language around women, how to use humor. But what a lot of guys don't realize is it's not just what you're doing when you're standing in front of her that attracts a woman. It's how you live the rest of your life. I know that's something that you talk about quite a bit. But, you know, if you're just going to try and turn on and be this guy, you know, right when you're standing next to a supermodel, that's not going to fly, right? But when you're at home by yourself, or when you and I are both entrepreneurs, there's something about building your own business and being an effective, you know, get things done type of guy that just feels good and radiates this sort of confidence that women pick up on.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything you just said resonates so much, Zach, and we're going to pick apart every little bit of that, because I'll tell you what, there's nothing worse than having a woman just feel completely let down because you as a guy let her down. I mean, you gave her these expectations of you being this leader who's a provider, protector, big four kind of guy, and then, you know, you just let it slip. And yeah, it's a relationship killer, and it really is a self-esteem killer too. So absolutely, dude. We're going to cover that big time. Before we get to that, though, I do also want to get to this voicemail that comes to us from Renee in New Orleans, Louisiana, down in New Orleans. And here's what he had to say. I think it's a pretty interesting question he's got.
Hey, Scott. I'm Renee from New Orleans, Louisiana. And I just want to address a problem that I've been just struggling with. Scott, we love it when we meet women who are nice, feminine, and we like to get in a good relationship with them. What about when they're not so nice to you? How do we, as men, handle any type of disrespect from women without disrespecting them back? I am not just talking about girlfriends, but moms, sisters, daughters, cousins, pretty much women in general. And most of the time, they may not even be mad with us. They could be just frustrated at work or had a bad day and just completely flick off everyone that they meet. So how do we just nip this in the bud and prevent this from ruining our relationships? Thank you, Scott. We'll talk again.
Now, you know, Zach, what a poignant question, right? Because I've actually seen guys produce entire programs, like you pay money to get them, on how to get bitchy women who aren't very nice to kind of like you anyway. You know, ways to kind of crack a woman's quote-unquote bitch shield. Man, I'll tell you what. Sometimes if a woman's just not very nice, you're kind of doing what I would call pushing it uphill to even try to get through to her, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, there are a few issues that Renee brought up there. And first and foremost, if it's somebody you've just met and they're being mean, you want to set a boundary and just either, you know, walk away from her, but shut it down really quickly. But if you can't, you know, why do you want to be around that person anyway? If you stick around and, you know, she can to be mean, she loses respect for you. because your status starts to drop and it shows that you don't have a lot of respect for yourself that you would up with that. So, but I think Renee's asking also about people that, you know, you're close to and sure. can't just walk away from.
Yeah, absolutely. That was kind of the meat of his question. So on one level, yes, if you don't know a woman very well, I think it does bear saying and repeating that, look, guys, why bother? I mean, sure, you can kind of call her out on it and say, well, you know what, I wasn't going to bite or anything, but it looks like you do, and start laughing. And she'll go, oh, you know what, I'm sorry, I just had a bad day. Hi, my name's Jennifer. As she kind of comes down from that quickly, as if you just caught her off guard and she kind of just snipped at you, that's one thing. But if she's just kind of a not nice person, if she's just a mean person, walk away. You don't owe yourself anything. You haven't been rejected. You haven't lost. It's not a contest that you've been defeated at. She's just not worth your time. Show the self-respect to move on. But yes, you're right. Renee was talking also about, you know, what about your sisters? What about people you work with? What about your own mother? What if women are just challenging you and trying to start arguments with you and just throwing vitriol at you? What if they just want to bring you down and call you names and start insulting you? What if that stuff starts happening? How does a man handle it? And Renee is already on the right track, I think, you know, Zach, because he says, well, you don't want to just disrespect her in return. Mm-hmm. Renee's showing some character there, even when women don't. What are your practical suggestions for when any of us get into that situation?
Okay. So the first thing, the most important part, and this is absolutely essential, and it's not easy, is to be in control of your emotions, at least to maintain control of your reaction. If somebody comes up and says something mean to you, if you have the right perspective, you can not let it escalate. I know when I was a young man, you know, in relationships, and when a girlfriend would do something that I didn't like, sort of play this fine, I'm going to do it back to her sort of game. And that's not being a grown up. You know, that's how you end relationships, and that's how you, you know, keep getting stuck in the same situation. So the first thing is to really find your center. And there's a couple ways to do this. One is to understand that you're only responsible for your behavior. And this is sort of the fundamental principle of assertiveness. I teach a lot of assertiveness because it's used to a weakness of mine, and I turned it into a strength, and it helped solve a lot of problems for me. But when you understand that she's going to act however she wants, regardless, you know, what you want, you let go of the frustration of trying to control something that you can't control, and realize what you can control is your own behavior, your own reaction, and hopefully that'll influence her to calm down, change the way she's acting towards you. It will happen eventually, but influencing her behavior and trying to control it are two very different things, and they result in two different emotions in you, because you have that sense. Okay, she can, you know, blow up her steam. She can do whatever she wants. All is what I can do. So that sort of sets tone for the other things that I'm going to share for Renee here. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just to kind of chime in a little bit here, the first thing I think of when I think of an interaction like this is the movie Godfather, where she's just throwing plates at him. You know, you're not going to win. The strong man, the mature man, the real man, is the quiet man who's restoring calm and who doesn't partake of that. He's not the guy who screams louder and bellows a deeper voice than her and throws something harder back at her. You don't win with physical strength. You win with emotional maturity, that kind of manly strength. And, you know, all of us flew off the handle when we were kids. As we grew up, we realized that didn't happen. As soon as you respond in kind to a woman's, well, emotional outburst, for lack of a better way to put it, you've already lost. I mean, it's been said, you know, by people who are negotiation experts, et cetera, he or she who raises his or her voice first loses the debate. I mean, that couldn't be more true, especially when it comes to male-female interactions. But continue.
Yeah, well, it's a great point, because if you're getting emotional, what that shows is that she has control over your emotion.
Sure.
If you need a certain result from her, if you need her to react a certain way, that gives her power for you.
That's especially why you should never let a woman push your hot buttons specifically.
That's not always easy, especially when you're in a relationship and she knows where those hot buttons are, and she knows how to push them. You know, learn to pause. Learn to pause before you react. And I found that this practice gives you some choice over your own behavior. So if you're not pausing, you're not going to be able to implement any of the other things that I'm going to share here. So stop, just pause for a moment, think, and then react. You don't have to respond right away. And I think sometimes we have this sense that we don't want there to be silence, or we don't want there to be, you know, tension in the room. So we rush to sort of put out the fire. Whereas you can imagine the power of a woman saying something nasty, and, you know, to look at you, it almost looks as if you didn't hear her. It doesn't register. And you take a moment and you think about it. And then from there, there are a couple things you can do. Using humor is great for diffusing the situation. Well, one thing I like to think about is that if you can imagine, how would you react if this person was a child, right? If this were a five-year-old, you wouldn't push back. You wouldn't get mad. You might do one of two things. You might show concern, right? You might use a bit of humor. Showing concern is a great one. So, you know, you're in line at the bank and, you know, somebody is behind you and they're really edgy and there's something wrong with them and they get mad at you for not moving forward in line or something like that. Hypothetical situation. If it were a child, you might look and say, oh, is everything all right? You know, are you having a bad day? I hope, you know, I really hope your day turns around. That's really sort of taking the higher ground. It's a very high status frame. It's sort of powerful as a technique, but it's also a powerful mindset. When I say, you know, if it was a small child, it's just a way of playing, you know, sort of the as-if game. You sort of maintain status. When you lose status, you could lose your manly position or your position of leadership and that sort of thing. It actually makes, you know, even though she's trying to maybe trying to knock you off there, she starts to feel more insecure and more upset. So one of the ways to do is stop and think, how would I react if this were, you know, a child that couldn't, you know, if a child comes up and calls you names, it's not going to really ruin your day. You know, you're probably, you chuckle and you maybe be concerned about them and that sort of thing. What do you think about that, Scott?
Well, I think I would just give her a good hard spanking. But above and beyond that, in all seriousness, you know, you really can't put a woman in timeout or anything like that. But you can spank her, which is good. And it's just not as politically incorrect to spank your wife or girlfriend these days as it is your children anyway. So I think that would be a capital idea, or a corporal idea at least. But I'm also reminded of two things. I'm reminded of Paul Newman and Liz Taylor and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, where she's just, you know, letting him have it. And he's kind of sitting there as if it's rolling right off his back the whole time. Great acting performance by both. Of course, Paul Newman, after that movie, pretty much was a heartthrob in Hollywood for the next three decades. Also, I'm quickly reminded of the difference between how William Jefferson Clinton handled his press conferences compared to his successor, George W. Bush. Bill Clinton, when asked a sticky question, would kind of pause, purse his lips together, and hold his thumb up and shake it a couple seconds until he found the right words.
Yes, absolutely.
He'd wait 5-6 seconds and take a deep breath, and then, after he'd thought about it, start talking. Whereas when George Bush was challenged by the media, you know, the reporter wouldn't even have the sentence out of his mouth, and then he'd be like, yeah, yeah, you know, there's this one thing there, yeah, yeah, you're right, I won't talk about it. And he would say something dumb, and he would gaff.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And people thought George Bush was stupid, even though he was Yale-educated, and I really think it's wholly attributable to him not grasping the one point you just gave this entire audience. That's how huge it is.
Wow, that's a great analogy. I never thought about that. But yeah, you end up saying stupid stuff if you don't stop and think first, because your first reaction is to push back.
Yeah, you never want to say something you regret in the presence of a woman. I think you've given really good advice here, and I think it's the whole answer. Really, Renee, just keep your wits about you. Keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, as Rudyard Kipling said, and as we've often repeated on this very show. It's not about winning an argument or winning a fight with a woman. Don't let that kerosene she throws on you erupt, explode into a raging bonfire. It's up to you. You have the control over that.
This is something you learn as a parent, because people, when they see a behavior problem in a child, they always ask, well, how do I deal with it when he throws a tantrum? What do I do when she won't go to bed? What I want to actually address with this is often it's how you address their good behavior that affects their bad behavior. So rather than sort of looking just for strategies on what to do when she, you know, when a woman's mean to you, start rewarding those moments where she's not mean to you. You know, when she does something kind, when she does something, you know, thoughtful, reward that, pay attention to that. psychologists have learned that positive reinforcement is much more powerful for modifying behavior than punishment and negative reinforcement. Imagine yourself. You imagine you met somebody or you're spending time with them and, you know, you're patient about something. You're kind of cool-headed about something. And she says, wow, you know, I love how you fly off the handle. You know, my previous boyfriend, he'd be downright mean to me sometimes. And I love that you don't get into that. How much more likely do you think you're going to be to maintain that good behavior, not be mean to her, than if she said, you're so mean all the time. You know, why do you say stuff like that? What's wrong with you? So I just want you to pay attention to that. And it's something that I learned with my kids. The way to, stop the behavior you don't want is to reward every behavior that you do want and make them feel so loved and make them feel, because there's often there's something else going on there. You know, there's something, some need you're not satisfying. But often we fail to recognize the good things and only address the bad things. So I just wanted to share that with Renee because I think that can be really helpful. It's remarkable how transformative it is when you shift your mindset to that. And that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I think that's a good word. You know, guys, if you're looking around and you're thinking that jerks get women with low self-esteem. You know, it's a guy who knows how to build a great woman into an even greater woman, really. I mean, she'll come back and build you into an even greater man. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be a partnership. And, you know, what you're talking about here is good not only for women you're dating, but also coworkers and even your mom, just like Renee was asking about. So, Renee, thanks for asking a great question, like unto which we've never answered before on this show. Outstanding. We want to go ahead and reward you for that. So, as we always do, we've got something for you. And, Zach, what do you got, man?
I've got a copy of my program, Find Your Focus, which is for eliminating procrastination, really getting on top of your life without needing willpower and pushing discipline and that sort of thing. Hacks that I discovered that helped me get on top of my own life. And Renee, I hope it's really helpful for you.
Good deal, good deal. I mean, that's what we're talking about today. So I'll tell you what, Renee, you're the beneficiary of one killer program there. It's been very popular and already changed a lot of lives. Guys, if you want to go ahead and submit a voicemail for possible inclusion on this program, such that an expert like Zach might answer your questions, go ahead and dial up the following number. +1 if you're outside the United States, 210-362-4400. Once again, 210-362-4400. When you call that line, no one's going to answer. You can call 24/7, 365 days a year. Go ahead and leave your question. Make sure it's concise. Make sure you say it clearly, especially if English is not your first language, if you're one of those guys from overseas. And make sure it's something that relates to a large cross-section of us as guys. If it's something very, very specific, very esoteric that probably only applies to you, it probably will never make this show. So go ahead and make it something very relatable. And when you're done leaving your question over the voicemail, be sure to give us your first name, the city where you're from, and also spell out your voicemail address so we can send you your prize once you earn it. So thanks again, Renee, for a great question, and we trust that we've given you an answer that's going to enlighten things for you there. Good stuff. Zach, man, let's hit with a big heavy hammer now, this whole idea of getting your act together. What causes us as guys to let our lives kind of fall apart instead of being together to begin with? It seems like we should all want to have our lives together and we should all aim in that direction. How come so few of us actually do that? How come so many of us are falling apart at the seams around here?
What I want to focus on is particularly, you know, business and, you know, those projects. You know, so many people say they want to write a book or they, you know, they have some business idea they want to launch and they don't get it done and they don't, you know, if you own your own business, certain things you want to implement that you never get to, projects you start and don't finish. I want to say first off, you know, if you apply what we're going to talk about today to one area of your life and take care of that area of your life, it becomes much easier to apply it to other areas of your life. I think one of the problems that guys get into is they say, I'm going to, you know, fix this and fix this. And in 1 month, they try and return to the gym, start a business, and get over their approach anxiety all at once. And it doesn't really work that way. So I really want to zero in on, you know, procrastination and follow through. Does that sound good to you?
Yeah, so what you're saying is guys bite off more than they can chew by dreaming so many things at once and trying to tackle them all in one fell swoop that they never get any of them done, when we should really be focusing on one thing at a time, keeping the main thing the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then when that becomes more habitual or more automatic, then you can move on. And sometimes you don't need to move on. Sometimes these things actually work themselves out just by the fact that you've worked it out in another area of your life. And that basic principle is something that, you know, I was for a long time. Our culture tells people to dream big and shoot for the stars. Even if you miss, you'll hit the moon and that sort of thing. And that's fine for your long-term goals, your dreams. But when it comes to the steps that you need to take to get there, setting smaller, it's like this. If you had a that was, you know, 50 feet tall, but had three rungs, you know, evenly spaced rungs, you wouldn't get there any quicker than if it had, you know, every foot or so. So by breaking things down into smaller chunks, you're not going to move any slower. You're not going to, you know, you're not compromising your vision or anything like that. But you are being more realistic, and you are going to have more success, and you're going to get things done in a way that builds your motivation and your enthusiasm for what you're doing, rather than, you know, discouraging you because you keep setting goals and not reaching them.
Yeah, one of the things that you're hitting upon there is something I believe for a long time, which is instead of just having one big, huge goal, setting small goals that you can enjoy the success at achieving, and then set another one that's another step up that 50-rung ladder. And, you know, that way you really can celebrate along the way. It isn't just one big painful mountain climb up to Everest, or else you're a failure. These smaller successes not only are something you can celebrate, they're things that beget the greater success. They build your confidence level so that you go, hey, I did that, so I can do this next one. It's kind of the whole SMART goals thing. It has to be something that's going to be reachable and something that's measurable. You know, you got to know it's there. You got to know you succeeded at it, and then you're energized to succeed at the next one. I'm reminded of a conversation I heard with Gary Vaynerchuk, who of course is a social media mogul nowadays, started off, you know, with Wine Library TV. And one of the things he said that just made me almost want to stand up and cheer was, you know, I had as much fun and I was as stoked the day I learned 100 people watched my Wine Library TV video years ago as I am today when anything happens. You know, some of the amazing things that are happening now, I'm no more or less excited about that than I was about reaching that smaller goal that was before me back then, because that's how I train myself. That's what he was saying, is you teach yourself to enjoy all of these small things because you see them pointing to something bigger. And ultimately, you learn to enjoy the journey as much as you do the destination. I'm a traveler. I love to go all over the world. People think I'm a weirdo because I take extra time to select the airline and even the aircraft we're going to fly to get there. But I especially like to take the airline of the country we're going to, because I feel like I've already stepped out of the United States and I'm already on my travel adventure as soon as I get on that airplane. For other people, that flight, that journey is literally a means to the end of getting to China or Japan or Germany. Whereas for me, the fun starts the second I get on the airplane. And I just always naturally looked at it that way. But, you know, the more I talk to other people who are travelers, the rarer I realize that perspective is. People just want to get on the airplane and freaking get there. Learn how to enjoy the journey in life. And you know what? I think you'll complete more of those journeys. It's like the guy who picks up a guitar and says, all right, well, I'm going to learn how to play Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin by 5 o'clock tonight. And then, you know, by 3:30, he's like, ah, screw it. And he throws the guitar in the corner and he never wants to see it again. You know, you got to learn G, C, D. You know, you got to learn your chords and go, hey, cool, I could play something. And that energizes you to want to move forward till finally, after a while, you've enjoyed this process even as you were becoming a guitar player. And what do you know? You're pulling out the guitar and playing guitar for women or even in clubs for money. Enjoy that journey because that's going to help you see more success ultimately.
Yeah, I think – obviously think about this a lot with the, you know, the program that I created. And when I was a kid, when I was in grade school, I loved reading fiction, right? I always have a novel on the go, or, you know, they were kids' books, but I really got a lot of enjoyment. We'd go on vacation and I'd spend a lot of time reading. And then in school and in high school, take English classes, and I'd have to read these books that I wasn't particularly interested in, and I had to read them and write essays on them, and there were due dates, there was pressure. And by the time I finished high school, I really didn't enjoy reading anymore. And it took a good 10 years after I finished high school, went to university for a year, and then I did theater school where I read plays and that sort of thing. But it took a good 10 years before I read a work of fiction again. And believe it or not, it was Harry Potter. And I was, I guess, 28 or 29 years old. You know, didn't have TV, and I thought, oh, I'll give this Harry Potter thing a chance. And I had so much fun. This was an easy book. It was an easy read. I read so much that I read the whole series, and then I moved on to more so-called sophisticated books, and I restored my love of reading. And it happens to people with work. Productivity is one of the greatest feelings that we have as humans. We're wired to love the feeling of getting things done. In fact, psychologists say the reason why we enjoy games so much is that they simulate the feeling, what they call blissful productivity, which is that feeling you get when you cross some things off your to-do. That feeling of being absorbed and engaged in what you're doing. And, you know, if you've got kids as well, when I look at my kids stacking blocks, if I start sweeping, you know, my son will get upset if I don't let him take the broom and help. And we actually are wired to enjoy that type of thing. But throughout school, because we're pressured to do it and we're pressured to do things that we're maybe not quite ready for, we start to resent it. And unfortunately for most people, that lasts their entire life. And they being work, as you say, is a means to an end. You know, it's a way to make money. It's a way to trade in my time so that I can make money so I can enjoy. As long as you're still having that experience, you're always going to procrastinate because you're still going to have that resistance. You're still going to have brain pain in association to getting down to work. So what I started to do when I started to get my own problems, I found ways to eliminate the brain pain involved in getting down to work. So that procrastination wasn't something that I needed to go through or overcome or fight against. It was a non-issue because when I woke up in the morning, I thought, I can't wait to get down to work. This is going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to get some things done. I'm going to be able to be creative. I'm going to see progress towards, you know, something bigger in my life. So, you know, it's a great point you make on the journey. And I think that's really what, you know, the answer is. And then, of course, there's various techniques for doing it. How do you get to that point where you enjoy the journey?
Well, hold on a second. You're also saying something else I think that is just as significant. And that's that if it's somebody else's journey you're feeling compelled to take instead of something you really feel passionate about, you're not going to really like doing it so much, and you may even feel resentment towards it. One of the things that I've heard you say, and this may tie together, and if it doesn't, let's tie it together anyway. Is that a lot of people think that even in the moment when they're being procrastinators, they're doing it out of pure unadulterated laziness. But you think there's something else driving it. It's not usually laziness, hardly at all. It's more that fear or that resentment or that just lack of passion towards it to begin with. They just feel like they have to do it instead of they want to do it. There's no real gain if they do it. And they almost feel like if they sabotage this rather than getting down to business with it, they'll actually end up even being happier because it's out of their life or it's off their plate instead of something they felt the pleasure of completing. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that'd be a real eye-opener for a lot of guys.
Yeah, it's almost never laziness. In fact, I don't really believe in laziness, believe it or not. Let's think about some people like Richard Branson or Steve Jobs or Tim Ferriss or Gary Vaynerchuk, people that are highly, highly productive, and they get a lot done during the day. They don't get a lot done because they have more discipline. I'd be willing to bet that Richard Branson doesn't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I got to go to work, and use discipline and willpower to force his way through so that he can, you know, make money. Obviously, he doesn't need any more money. You know, people like them, they get things done because it charges them up and it makes them feel alive and they love it. So it's not a question of laziness versus discipline for them. It's the natural choice because they've learned what I think is one of the secrets to a happy life, which is when you can find enjoyment in your work like that, it's not that you become a workaholic and you can't enjoy the rest of your life, but in fact, you become more present with your work, which makes you more present working.
Yeah, you're having more fun with it. It doesn't even feel like work anymore. And I mean, there's people who can do jobs that other people find just ghastly and potentially depressing and love it. I mean, I know someone who's an accountant and they love doing taxes. I think they're nuts. But that's what they do. That's what they like doing. That's why that person should be an accountant instead of someone else. I mean, I know so many people who, like, for example, default into doing sales because they haven't been trained to do anything else, but they can't stand selling, so they're lousy salespeople. I mean, I think one of the keys here that you're hitting on that maybe here's one way to put it into words is the first step to getting your act together as a guy is to make sure it's your act you're getting together. I mean, is this your gig? Are you trying to be someone else? Are you trying to make someone else happy? Are you trying to earn someone else's approval? Are you doing what you feel like you've got to do, or you're not going to pay the bills this week and you're going to go underwater? Are you just treading that water instead of making something happen in your life that you're proud of and you're excited about? Make sure the act that you're getting together is actually yours, right?
That's a good point. And one of the things you sort of alluded to is your motivation towards something that is exciting to you, or is it just away from bad things? So away from debt, away from bouncing a check. You know, if you're just moving away from those things, you're not going to enjoy that. And you're going to do what they've shown is that when you're motivated by punishment or by fear or by threats, you will do the minimum it takes to avoid that threat, and then you'll stop. And with procrastination, if you look at most of the advice that's out there, it's like set a deadline and tell your friends and tell people it's going to be done and make commitments and actually put more pressure on yourself to get it done. And that, to me, is coming at things from the wrong direction. In fact, it makes you resent it more, and it causes more, you know, what I call brain pain. Doing it makes you more likely to avoid it. Sometimes you can make it work. You know, it'll work in the short term. If you're in school and you need to finish a project or you need to get something done, you can use pressure and use deadlines, and you can use threaten yourself, that sort of thing, to get things done in the short term. As soon as that's over, you're going to go right back to procrastinating, and you're going to, again, associate more pain with getting things done. You know, not everybody wants to start their own business and do that sort of thing, but your job does have to have some level of ownership in it, you know, and that comes down sometimes to employers, but you can talk to your boss, and rather than doing some part of a project that you're not even sure how it fits in with the rest of the project, doing one thing from start to finish, or having, you know, some responsibility over it, taking some ownership of it. As I said, we're wired to enjoy being productive. We're wired to enjoy creating things and getting them done when we go about it in the right way. So yeah, you could start something on the side that's very rewarding, or you could try and find that level of autonomy within your current job.
You know, one of the things you talk a lot about is finding your focus. And indeed, the name of your program is Find Your Focus. Perhaps guys are sitting out there going, yeah, you know, I think I've gotten myself caught into this trap of drudgery. Nothing is exciting to me that I do. All of the things that I've set as goals really aren't what I'm passionate about. Yet they're saying, I don't even know how to start finding what it is I really want to be focused on. And even if I did, I don't know how I would turn this ship with such a small rudder to get there. What are your ideas for helping guys practically find their focus?
You know, there's something in your mind that you want to do that you're not doing yet. And the idea is to reprogram you from resenting work and resenting getting things done and feeling like you have to do it in order to pay the bills to doing it because it, you know, it turns you on and it makes you alive and it actually energizes you as opposed to draining you. So I think one turnaround points for me, and doing this, again, just on its own, you know, is not going to work. You have to do it sort of combined with some of the other things that I'll talk about right now. But one was to actually schedule fewer hours for myself to get things done. So I started my own business. I was trying to get things done. I'd let the entire day go by. I'd procrastinate. I'd be on Facebook and I'd, you know, chat with this person. And it's the end of the day and I've got nothing done. So I say, all right, well, I'll stay up late tonight and I'll get some things done. And of course, I would. I'd, you know, watch a show or something like that. And I'd say, okay, tomorrow, because I didn't get anything done today, tomorrow, if I put in, you know, a 10-hour day, I should be able to catch up. And what would happen is the next day, the intimidation and the fear and the trepidation of facing 10 hours of something made me not want to start. And it wasn't until I stopped and said, you know, if I were to just do 2 hours of focused work on this, I could be done for the day, and I would actually get more done in that 2 hours than I do on most days. And taking the pressure off like that made those 2 hours some of the most enjoyable 2 hours of my day. And that expanded to, at the end of 2 hours, I wanted to keep going. And now I typically work 4 to 6 hours a day, but that's a good focus to work. I think I was reading Dan Kennedy, who's a big marketer, who was saying that typically in an 8 hour day, people get 1.5 to 2.5 hours of actual work done. Well, what if you could consolidate that work to the first couple hours of your day, and then you could be free for the rest of the day? And that was, I had this big fear of structure. So when I did that, psychologically knowing that I was locked into having to trade in all my hours like that, freed me up to enjoy it more and made me want to choose it more.
Interesting. You know, one thing we were talking about kind of offline before we got on this call, we promised ourselves we'd save it for the podcast, is this whole idea of being in congruence with your own character. One of the things that, you know, we have a little mastermind group. One of the things I contributed to that conversation the other day, because someone had asked, how do I not feel guilt or fear about having made some money? You know, how do I not feel like, hey, they're going to come rip me off, or people are going to steal it from me, or feel like, hey, I don't deserve this money when there's so many poor people in the world or whatever. And one of the things that came to mind for me is, show me a guy who's made his money in a way that makes the world a worse place and then proceeded to spend all that money on himself. And I'll show you a guy who is fearful and a guy who is shameful over it. I used to work with gang kids, and one of the things that was incredibly flat out shocking to me, and I know that's an overused term, shocking, you know, everything is shocking because it gets people's attention to say it is. But one of the most amazing things to me in that regard about the kids I worked with was that they were nice kids. You know, they were red-blooded human beings who didn't really like to cause pain. They weren't evil. I mean, some of them were. I think there were some flat-out psychopathic ones amongst them, but the rest of them had been drawn into this vida loca, as they called it, that involved guns and watching your back and shooting, and they were more about the excitement, and they almost considered it like a video game than really wanting to do bad in this world. Yet it became a protectionism against poverty, against getting hurt by someone else, against living in the environment they grew up in and having to succumb to it. It was their simple way of overpowering things instead of being overpowered by it. A lot of the people who end up doing things they never wanted to do and that they feel bad about didn't really choose that. The path chose them. So I think it's an incredible point to make that you've got to be doing something that makes you feel good. If you're doing something that makes the world a better place instead of a worse place, you know, what we do around here, I like to think it's changing guys' lives for the better. I don't think we're here to, you know, swindle guys out of money and tell them lies about women and foment this whole idea that women should just be used for one thing. That's probably why I speak out against that and feel like we're kind of the answer to that more so than maybe some of the other guys, is because I really want to make this something that we're doing that's good for the world. I'm reminded of the movie Bullet with Steve McQueen, where, you know, he works for a largely corrupt police force in San Francisco, yet he's trying to bring this guy to justice, and it seems like he's doing it by himself. And at the end, when everything does work out and justice is served, the very last scene of the movie, gets home and he takes off his vest, you know, and famously he's got his holster on underneath his vest, you know, it's like a concealed weapon, and you can just see that gun like slung at his side, and puts his hands on the sink in the bathroom and just looks up in the mirror and sees himself in the mirror, and that's the end of the movie. That whole idea of being able to look at ourselves in the mirror is going to make us a lot more excited to do what we do. And if once we reach our goals, not only have we made the world a better place instead of a worse place by doing that, you know, for example, if you're a drug dealer and you're getting people hooked on heroin and people are dying because of what you're doing, you may not feel good about that. But if you have that good feeling about what you're doing, and then once you reap some benefit of that, you can share it. And it may just be as simple as sharing it with your family, raising your kids. A lot of times when NBA players grow up rather poverty-stricken, and you know, we hear the stories of, I think, Dwayne Wade, his mom scrubbed floors to send him, you know, through school and to feed him. And the first thing he did after he got his millions as a rookie in the NBA was buy his mom a home and a car, you know, and you see stories of a lot of NBA players who are doing the same thing. Kevin Durant, you know, famously adores his mom and buys her diamonds. This is because you can't just spend it all on yourself and feel good about it. It can't be a self-serving venture. You can't just be greedy and have that soothe your soul. To find your focus and really make it something worthwhile and to really feel like you have your life together means to make life a better place for more people. Now, sure, you may want to buy yourself a new Beamer and, you know, get some nice things for yourself, and you should live comfortably and you should be able to reach those goals. But if you're not giving, if you're not donating time, money, resources, knowledge, expertise, if you're not helping other people come up, then you're not ultimately going to be excited about it, and it won't feel like your life is together. It won't feel like your act is together. And no, the high quality women will not appreciate that. It has to be all with a common life purpose that builds rather than tears down. And then that's what's really going to make you feel good and make the women respond.
The feeling that you're contributing is key. I have a section in the program that we've touched on. And the other one is the feeling that you're improving at something. These are some of the things that really motivate you, that make work enjoyable beyond, you know, watching your bank account go up, which isn't too bad a reward either.
No.
It's not enough. I have a friend who's an internet marketer, and he made a lot of money just sending traffic to porn sites. And he's got lots of money, and making money does not excite him in the least anymore. And so thing that we've talked about quite a bit, he's a friend, but he started off as a student and become friends, is just finding something where he's contributing, because he's missing that in his life. Mm-hmm. And that's going to not only, you know, make him happier, but that's going to draw the type of women that he really wants into his life. Right.
Agreed. Yeah. And you're talking about that progression. I'm getting better. I'm improving. I'm becoming a better man. I'm becoming more talented. That does energize us too, because it gives us that feeling we can build on this. It gives us that evidence. I love it. I love it. Well, I think we've had a great conversation here. We've really helped a lot of guys. I want to first of all point guys to your Find Your Focus program, because it's been immensely popular. I've gotten great feedback from it. Guys, if you want to check that out, I strongly recommend it. Don't procrastinate now. Go to this URL right now, www.thechickwhisperer.com/focus, F-O-C-U-S. So as always, it's the same general domain. It's www.thechickwhisperer.com, only this time /focus, and you'll find Zach's program, and there's a nice video for you that'll give you kind of a neat insight and an introduction to it. Before we go, it's custom to ask our co-host some questions. Zach, you ready for the lightning round here, man?
Stretched, and I'm warmed up, and I'm ready.
Good, good, good. What are you going to have for dinner tonight?
Probably going to have broccoli cheese soup. My wife made it last night, and I got home too late to eat it, and I'm really looking forward to it tonight.
Well, that's good stuff. You know, it's usually better the second day, that soup stuff.
It all soaks in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What's on your iPod?
What am I listening to these days? I really like John Mayer.
Oh, who doesn't?
Yeah, anyone who plays guitar or knows anything about guitar, the man is just a genius on the guitar and an amazing songwriter, and he takes a lot of flack, but I think he's very misunderstood.
Sure. Jack Johnson is another guy along those lines whose music I like. What's the best movie you've seen lately?
Best movie I've seen lately? This was a great movie, a little upsetting. Rachel Getting Married with Anne Hathaway. It's one of those movies where the writing is fantastic, the cinematography is fantastic, the acting's fantastic, but there's a scenario in there that's a little upsetting. Some of the subject matter is a little upsetting, so it doesn't ruin anything. I don't want to spoil it, but really,
it was
really
good.
Really, really good movie, but it also, you know, I teared up a little bit. So
reminds you you're alive, right?
Yeah.
What's your ride, man? What are you driving these days?
A RAV4.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's actually my dream car. Someone was asking me recently, well, if you were a millionaire, you could drive any car, what would it be? You know, I kind of like the RAV4. I don't really like the idea of having a car that stands out and it's really racy, but I do like being up a little bit higher than in a car, and it's good for the family.
You know, I rented one of those things in New Zealand, and of course the steering wheel was on the right-hand side. It was a stick shift. It was a 6-speed diesel 4x4 RAV4, and I was like, you know what, this is a man's car. I like this truck. Yeah. Right, RAV4 is a good ride. What's the best thing about your wife?
So many things. The best thing about her is, I say a few things.
Sure, man. You're married to her, man. You can't limit it to just one.
Exactly. Her sense of humor, we really laugh at the same things, and she's someone who can make me laugh, which is, I don't want to say it's rare, but I didn't often find it in girls I was dating in the past. So that's one of her great points. Another is that she's a thinker. She uses her brain, and we're on the same wavelength. And then the third thing is watching her with the kids. She is just so sweet with them. She sits down on the floor with one of the boys playing cards or playing make-believe. That just melts my heart. And the other thing is that she's really hot.
It always helps. Yeah, I just love when women show that motherly spirit. And a lot of the guys out there are kind of like rolling their eyes, you know, especially the younger guys. I'm telling you, there's nothing more feminine and hot when a hot woman is really a nurturer like that. Good stuff. I'll tell you what, guys, Zach's program, Find Your Focus, not only is very interesting, it works. So go to www.thechickwhisperer.com/focus and check that out. And also, if you're not on my newsletter, you're missing out on awesome free content just about every day of the week. So go ahead and get you some. deservewhatyouwant.com. Let's just send you right to the main website, because that way you get a free special report on how to ace the first date and get the second date. So that's kind of like killing two birds with one stone. Plus, it's kind of a neat jumping off point to everything we do here at XMY Communications when you visit that site. So,
I'm on your newsletter list, and your newsletters are jam-packed. They're always content-driven, and a lot of people will send these, hey, you got to check out this program or something like that. But you're always sharing great stuff, letters from readers and that sort of thing. So yeah, I would recommend anybody to check out what you have to say in your email newsletters.
Yeah, man, you got to pack some substance into that stuff or else it's just not worth reading, right? I tell you guys about some stuff that's interesting other than the content sometimes, but the content's almost always there for you. And I always pour my heart and soul into that because, hey, it's something I'm focused on, something I'm excited about, and something I wake up every morning wanting to do, just like we've been talking about in this entire show. Once again, thanks for joining us here today, Zach. Excellent, excellent content from you today as well, my man.
Thanks, Scott. It was a pleasure.
And until I talk to you guys again real soon for episode number 56 of the Chick Whisperer podcast, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications. Be good out there.
The Chick Whisperer podcast is copyright 2009. By XY Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to sign up for the XY Communications newsletter at www.thechickwhisperer.com. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Chick Whisperer Podcast.